recently worked on well-known programs like Breaking Amish and various spin-offs. Again, the program that we're talking about today is called The Sisterhood, Becoming Nuns. And the fifth and sixth, the last two episodes of this limited series, will be airing tonight on Lifetime. Linda Corley, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you.
I wonder if
it's
you.
It's a real pleasure.
I'm glad we have this opportunity. I wonder if we could talk for a moment before we delve into the specifics of this really interesting program, to talk about reality programs in general. My fingers are making little quotes in the air, and of course nobody can see those on the radio, but I think a lot of people are aware of the fact that although such programming is called reality television generally, that also the closer we look, especially in certain examples, we're not really being treated to an unvarnished slice of real life, that programs, even if they aren't really scripted by a playwright, are sometimes really focused and molded and so on to create good television, so to speak. I wonder if you could just speak to that issue, because it's probably one reason why a lot of people love reality television and why other people sort of have a philosophical problem with it. Could you just talk about that?
Well, you know, I worked in documentaries for many years. And now I work in reality television, and I always tell people there's a lot of similarity between documentary and reality television. In fact, documentaries were the first reality series, you know, if you really think about it. It goes under the heading of unscripted television. What producers do, you know, when you say reality television, there's many flavors of reality television. You know, if you were to watch a family through the course of a day and just let them go, and, you know, it'd be like watching grass grow. You know, there's every family is interesting, but the interesting things, maybe four or five of them happen in the course of a month, not necessarily a day. And so you are kind of pushing the envelope for those five interesting things that happen a month to them to happen in one day, you know, because of budget reasons, because of, you know, the short attention span of an audience. You know, National Geographic, you know, you used to be able to watch that tiger in the grass, and you would be watching for minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes to go by till something happened. Audiences' attention spans are not like what they used to be. So, you know, reality television is kind of quickening that exciting moment to happen a lot faster.
Right. I'm actually really glad you came up with that particular example because, of course, the other thing is even when we're watching something like a documentary from as prestigious and serious an organization as National Geographic, chances are we're not seeing anything close to the amount of time that a tiger would sit there crouched in the grass waiting for potential prey. Any kind of a program that would show real life out in the wild to that extent wouldn't feel like a television program at all, and none of us would watch it.
Exactly.
I wonder if the concern, and we'll get to the specifics of this in just a moment with The Sisterhood, which is what we're talking about today, but I wonder if you can just address then that question of, in the interest of sort of helping to prompt exciting and interesting things to happen, where is the line there that one perhaps should not cross if you're trying to put together a serious reality program with some sense of integrity? What is your own guiding philosophy in terms of how much of that is okay versus how much of that is so manipulative that suddenly what we're watching is no longer anything remotely resembling real life?
Well, I should just say, tell everyone, I'm a Catholic. I went through Catholic school, loved the nuns, and I made it very clear that there would be two lines we never cross, everything has to be authentic, and everything has to be full of respect. It always has to be respectful, and it always has to be authentic. So if we're good on those two lines, then we're basically on the up and up. We also allowed each convent to watch the rough cuts. They guided us, the sisters, you know, in helping us decide what the girls would do every day and to make sure that it was an authentic experience because, you know, honestly, in their own interest, didn't they want to have one of those girls enter the convent, you know? That was the whole reason they did it because, you know, next year is the year of consecrated life. That is what Pope Francis had deemed in 2015. So the Catholic Church is mandated to really concentrate on vocations next year. And that is really why some of these very conservative sisters decided to open up their doors for the first time to reality television producers in a hope to speak to millennial women. And in order to convince them to do that, we really had to promise them that we would show things pretty much like they really are. Yes, a discernment process can take many months and many years. And it's just we were talking about the tiger in the grass. If we were to watch a girl's discernment process go on for 3 years, we probably would have lost the audience in the second week. So right. We had to speed things up. And that is, to answer your question, that's kind of where we drew the line. We had an authentic experience, but in a much more faster pace.
Right. So everything we're seeing is true. It's just
absolutely
unspooling, at a rate that's not quite lifelike. And I think most people can understand why that is a very viable and perhaps even necessary choice for you to make.
Yes, but, you know, also the five girls were all at different stages of their discernment process. For instance, Christy, Stacy, and Claire had been to many convents before, you know, we had even caught up with them. So, you know, they were in the middle of their journey, middle of their discernment process. Someone like Asini, I don't think she'd ever been to a convent in her life. Sure, certainly she's a Catholic and she goes to Catholic school. But, you know, they were newcomers to this process. They were, when I say they, and Francesca too, they were open-minded about, you know, let's see if a life of a sister would be for me. But, you know, you had people like Claire that, you know, they had already visited the Dominicans and the Franciscans. And so, you know, they were much farther in their discernment process than Asini. So this was very typical for someone like Claire and Stacy. To join them on what some sisters call a nun run, you know, where you're visiting various convents over a short period of time.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Linda Corley, and she is supervising producer for a limited reality series airing on the Lifetime channel called The Sisterhood, Becoming Nuns. Through the course of 6 episodes, we follow 5 young women who are on various points in the path towards becoming nuns. And the last 2 episodes, the 5th and 6th episodes, air tonight on Lifetime. Linda Corley, tell us more about the overtures. Once it had been determined that this project was in fact going to happen. I'm just really curious to know about those very initial transactions. And if you had any part to play in laying the groundwork, in establishing communication and transacting the high level of cooperation, which ultimately is a hallmark of this series.
Yeah, you know, this wasn't easy to do, and if it had, it would have been done many years ago. And the sisters just really at the beginning, I was asked this question many times, you know, we show nuns in habits, and we went to more of the traditional convents, but That really wasn't necessarily by choice. We threw out the invitation nationwide to all sorts of communities of women religious, and it was a good year in really talking to these sisters. And when I say, it just wasn't over the phone. I mean, we flew out, we broke bread with them. You know, I spent a lot of time with the mother superiors of many of these convents, getting them to trust us. And that word trust was the most important thing, to show them that we really were well-intended. We were going to open the convent doors with respect and show their community and the way they live and why girls out there should perhaps, you know, if they don't consider marriage, you know, maybe consider a life as a sister and why it would be a worthwhile life.
Hmm. I wonder, first of all, it occurs to me that, although I certainly don't want to imply that your typical nun never turns on a TV, although there's plenty that probably don't and plenty that probably do. But I wonder how much did they, that I mean by that, the powers that be to whom you spoke, what acquaintance did they have with so-called reality television? And what misgivings do you think they had about the potential for this to end up being something very different from what you just described? I mean, something that would be more of a reflection of the, let's say, more shallow and sensationalistic kinds of reality programming that is out there. Did they have any serious fears along those lines?
Serious? Yes. Especially when they started watching Breaking Amish, you know?
Mm.
They did. And, you know, it's funny, especially in one convent, it was the novices, the young girls, that said, no, mother, you shouldn't do this, because they thought we were going to turn it into a circus. And I, you know, being in television, working in reality, but then working for public television, I could totally understand. I could totally understand why they would be fearful. And with that said, I think I was the best person to talk to them, because I would be the same way too. I think that by saying, we want you to help us with this, we are going to open up each day with a meeting with you, and we are going to talk through your day, and we want you to help us sculpt what we show on camera so that it is the most authentic experience and portrayal of what you do.
Hmm.
Once we gave the power to them, so to speak, they started to trust us and say, you know what, I think it's time now. I think it's time that we open our doors and let people see how we live.
Hmm. I wonder, what you just said prompts me to wonder this. If I were in their position, I think one of the things I would be anxious to show the world, or, I mean, on some level, a little part of me would be tempted to try to show the world an especially positive, especially rosy picture of, for instance, what it means to be a nun, what it means to be a novitiate, what it means to be on this path. And clearly, your program is not limited by that kind of vision. I mean, the fact that we are shown some of the really terribly painful struggles that especially several of these young women undergo, I mean, the anguish, the tears, I mean, this is not an easy road at all. And I should think that, in a sense, it's its own sort of leap of faith, that in the end it will be a benefit to the Catholic Church to show this experience in such unvarnished fashion.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, when a girl does decide to become a sister, you know, they really should know what it's all about. And these women, in my opinion, are some of the unsung heroes of the Catholic Church, and they're doing incredible work that, with that said, is very difficult. So one thing we wanted to do is work in concert with them to make sure that we saw their ministry. You know, taking their makeup off, you know, and Francesca crying that she wasn't going to be able to wear makeup, and the sister saying, you know, you need to wear a uniform, that is very minor of a sacrifice compared to ministering to the homeless every day and doing the sacrifices that these women do every day. I mean, their vows of poverty, you know, chastity and obedience is very real. And in order for these five young girls to really know what they were going to get into down the line, it had to be an unvarnished experience. You know, it couldn't be something where, you know, they were singing all day, you know, and big kumbaya moments, even though there was a lot of that too. They needed to really see what the ministries were, because it's like when you go to college, you might like the campus, but more importantly, you've got to like what you're studying. You've got to like your what you're majoring in. That's super important, because that's something you're going to be doing for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. And the fact of how fancy the cafeteria is, how nice the furniture is in the lounge of your dorm, that doesn't have a whole lot to do with the nuts and bolts and heart and soul of what you're doing.
Exactly. And so when a woman commits to the convent, they're looking at two things. They're looking at the community of sisters. You know, do I like these women? Could they be sisters of mine? You know, are we all going to get along? Am I, you know, feeling comfortable here? And number two, and most importantly, do I love their ministry? Am I going to love being a school teacher and, you know, spending my time giving to young children the rest of my life? Or is the homeless, do the homeless speak to me? You know, and so I think what you're going to find in this, a lot of the girls struggled with some of the ministries. As much as they might have loved the convent and they loved the sisters, the ministry wasn't speaking to them. At the end of the day, the girls that went to certain convents, I believe from what I saw firsthand, it was because the ministry spoke to them.
Tell us about these five particular young women whose path, or a portion, a slice of their path, we follow through the course of this short series. We've mentioned one or two of their names kind of in passing already through the course of this interview, but I think we need to meet them in a little more detail right now. Ahead of that, say a word about the process by which you found these five particular women and what criteria you followed in selecting them to be before the camera in this way.
Yeah, the girls were selected first, and I worked with a producer that is really good with, you know, interviewing cast members and people to be on shows. The criteria was they had to be Catholic girls. They had to be very serious in this journey. So they either had to be in discernment already, or they had to be already questioning a future. Maybe never have been on a retreat before, but really wanted to experience the discernment journey for the 6 to 8 weeks. So how we found them was through religious blogs. Like Claire, for instance, had a religious blog. And she is a homeschool girl from Joliet, Illinois. And she is, all of them, by the way, either were in Catholic college or attending a Catholic university at the time. So by word of mouth was another way, through a lot of vocational directors had pointed out different girls. So, you know, that's basically how we, you know, the Catholic network is a wonderful web. And if this diocese doesn't know someone, that person in that office knows somebody in the Cincinnati diocese who will put you in touch. So it was really, really great networking that helped us find these amazing girls. And they were. The beauty of these girls is they were all different. We really wanted to choose girls that we're across the board, you know, in terms of ages, you know, economic backgrounds, you know, they're just really just a great slice of life, these women. Mm. You know, one was very young, she's very immature, she has a lot of growing up to do. Another girl, you know, is 27, very mature, had already been involved in a career. And so, you know, these aren't girls that are cookie cutter girls. They're not girls necessarily that you would definitely expect to become a sister. Although I have to say, Claire, from the very beginning, our audience is always writing and saying, I know Claire's going to become a sister, because Claire has already been through a great amount of discernment, and she comes from a super duper religious family. She's the kind of girl that wanted to become a sister since she was 3 years old. Mm. You know, we like to nickname her St. Claire. You know, she's delightful. And you know, she is, I guess if you were a betting person, all the bets would be on Claire at the very beginning at the first show. And you know, and then there would be Assini, who is our girl from the Bronx, and she is of Hispanic background. So her Catholic experience has been from a Central American perspective of Catholicism, and so there is that slice of life with Assini. Stacy is a wonderfully, very mature for her age girl, who actually lives in a seminary, in Long Island that they had turned into a Catholic community. She had spent a couple of years of her life in kind of an off-Broadway, you know, in musical theater, very talented woman. Claire, had been in country western bands. She's over in California. I call her our California Catholic because she's charismatic, another side of the Catholic Church. Really a cool Catholic. Christie's got a great heart, wonderful girl. And then there's Francesca, who's our youngest, and she is Italian-American from New Jersey, and she comes from the quintessential Italian-American family, you know. They all get together, aunts and uncles and cousins, on Sunday afternoon, and, you know, very, very, very Catholic family. Just, she's a delightful girl, too. So, you know what, they're all different. They're all lovely. I think young girls watching the show can all see one of the girls, relate to one of those girls. I know all my friends have their favorite girl that they're kind of cheering on to become that sister, you know. I can't tell you how many times I've been bribed by neighbors and friends saying, please tell me, I want to know, you know, which girl goes into the sisterhood. And I can't tell you. You know, you've got to watch all six shows.
A couple other questions come to mind. One of them is that it feels like your cameras go just about everywhere. I mean, there aren't too many places that they go where your cameras aren't also there. I'm curious, first of all, how much of the time were there cameras on these young women? I mean, was it for days at a time, all day long and all evening long, or was their time in front of the camera a little more intermittent? And were there any sort of tricky choices to make about that kind of logistical matter?
Yeah, the logistics were very difficult because you really didn't want. See, the sisters, and I don't blame them. They said, "Listen, we want this to be a true discernment." So there. The thing is, with discernment, there has to be quiet time. There has to be time where you're quiet, you know, with the Lord, you're quiet with your thoughts. And in order to do that, you can't have the camera on you all the time. So we would basically spend a 10-hour day with the girls. And at night, the girls were with each other, alone, or with the sisters. There were a couple days off a week. You know, the crew needs time off. The girls needed time off from us. The nuns needed time off from all of us. So that would be the time the sisters would take them and, you know, do a retreat or, you know, a day of prayer, a day of silence. At nighttime, you know, the girls were alone with the sisters. So the camera wasn't there, not every single solitary minute. With that said, I did something unusual. I moved into the convent with the girls. I was like a fly on the wall, and really only there if something was happening. I did too have a camera. And that's why I think you are saying that it feels like we were there at all the important moments, because I was available if I felt I should be present to be telling that story at that time. But there were times away that the girls got their own relaxed time, their own time with God, their own time with the sisters.
Right. I've done enough of these interviews over the years with for POV and other programs to know that, having heard from many, many documentarians over the years, that there are all kinds of ways in which you can be an amazingly unintrusive element in people's lives, even when you're there with a camera, potentially recording their every word and their every move. There are all kinds of ways to, in a sense, not overtly insert yourself into your subjects' lives. I mean, to be an observer whose presence they almost forget about after a time. And certainly there are scenarios where that is the goal and then it's achieved. Would you say that this was that kind of situation, or was this more a case where you were really there and maybe even a friend of these five young women and not quite so much the forgotten fly on the wall?
You know, I think it would be a little bit of both. I, as a producer, you're right. I think I was that more of that friend, that mom to these girls. You know, a long time ago, Charles Corral, one of the best interviewers in the world, he came and gave us a seminar at the public television station I was working at. And he said the best way to get people to be themselves is what he called cocooning. And you need to be with them a couple of days, if not a week, before the cameras arrive. And just get them to trust you. Become part of their world. And just really build that, you know, that inner circle with them. I did the same with the sisters. Now, when it came to the cameras, now you've got equipment, you know, and now you're being reminded that you're being recorded. But, you know, we ate with the sisters. We were there at Mass with the sisters and the girls. So we became, first of all, I would say we became part of the wallpaper, so to speak. But at the end of the day, because when, you know, meals are shared and you're transporting everybody together and you're spending all this time together, you're also becoming family as well. So to answer your question, I'd say a little bit of both.
Hmm. I wonder also if you think it was a significant factor in the way these five young women experienced this and walked this path, that they were doing so for your cameras. That is, the process, and I think all of our listeners have watched enough reality television to know that scenario where, you know, things happen, they're captured on television, on film, and then they talk about it. They describe what happened and try to explain why it happened or why they had that meltdown or why they missed their parents or whatever's going on. I wonder if you have a sense that by participating in this program, the Sisterhood, if these five young women perhaps experience this journey in a way that might have been different if they had just done so without being part of this. I suppose it's hard to know, but do you have a sense of that?
I would say for most of the girls, you know, as I said, they were already in a discernment program. So they were already visiting sisters. Where I'd say we might have had a little bit of influence is we said, you're visiting these sisters, you know. So at the end of the day, if one of the girls joins the Kentucky convent, let's just say, or the Carmelite convent, would she have visited without us the Dominican convent and became a Dominican? You know what I'm saying? It's sort of like, how does fate play into the man that you marry or the college that you go to? Is it because your uncle had gone there and takes you there by the hand? You know, I'd have to say that's where we had some influence.
You made opportunities available to them that might otherwise not have been available or easily accessible to them.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there were plenty of times where the girls would say, you know, I wouldn't have thought I would have visited this convent. Or, you know, Claire would say, I thought I knew all the convents that there were. I didn't even know about the daughters of so-and-so, you know. So I think we put some sisters on their radar that wouldn't have been there. I think we stretched their limitations. I think there were certain charisms and ministries that they tried, you know, because of us, that and realized, you know what? I am good with working with underprivileged, you know, the homeless. I never thought I had that in me. You know, I think it was Sister Maria Therese said, you know, we are going to show you the best person that you could possibly be and really pull which you didn't even know you had inside you, make you face your fears. And I think some of these girls that do enter the convent might not have chose these ministries, might not have thought that they could do this. So I'm glad, or I want to believe that we gave them choices that they didn't even know they had.
Right. I do want to ask you about one specific moment. And for anyone who's not seen this, I think I don't want to say reveal too many of the details, because even if someone hasn't yet seen this episode, I know there are ways to access it via, I think, Lifetime's website and so on. But in one of the episodes that I was able to watch, there is a really pretty painful moment where one of these young girls has kind of an emotional disintegration, and They have relinquished their cell phones, but she borrows a cell phone from one of the nuns, and in order to call her mother, and she is sobbing and hyperventilating as she pours out her anguish at feeling so confused and lost, and it's really something to hear that. The cameras keep a respectful distance as she has this conversation, but we clearly hear every single word. And I wonder if you could just say a word about what it's like to capture a moment like that. And I guess I'm prompted to ask, because if I was watching, you know, the Real Housewives of blah, 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 or some other, you know, really kind of awful reality program where it's all about exploiting the lives of other people in a very uncaring way, I mean, the question would hardly occur to me, but obviously this is a program conceived in a much more humane and thoughtful fashion, and that a moment like that has nothing to do with sensationalism or preying on the pain of another person. But nevertheless, there it is. I wonder if you could just say a word about the inclusion of those kind of deeply personal moments. I mean, it is riveting television, but I wonder if you struggled at all with what that meant to share that kind of moment from someone else's life with a television audience.
Well, you know, I know you're talking about Francesca, and, you know, each of the girls, as would be expected of any individual, had their one thing that was really hard to give up. And that's, you know, women 500 years ago going into the sisterhood would have had that one or two hard things to give up. And for Francesca, it was the cell phone, but it was more than just the cell phone. It was the connection that the cell phone afforded her to her mother. And the ministry that she was dealing with, which was the elderly and infirm, reminded her of her grandmother that her mother was attending back at home. And there was a guilt that Francesca felt being in her early 20s and going to college and leaving her mother alone with her grandmother who had Alzheimer's and feeling really bad about it, and then now being at this senior center and being reminded of it. You know, this is a real moment, and I think it's a very beautiful moment. The wonderful thing, I think, catching about materialism, and yes, these girls are going through these hard moments, but the beauty is you've got these women that are coming to their aid, and these girls go on through from the first episode to the end, whether they become sisters or not. Guess what? They become better women. They become better people. And they had to go down into the basement to go all the way up to the top, you see. So you're going to get those raw moments. There's no way around it. They were in harsh situations. There were situations these young girls were never used to. But you know what? Each and every one of them would tell you they would do it all over again.
I have no doubt of that. And indeed, we see so much compassion and tenderness, and as these five young women leave each of these convents that they visit, there are hugs and smiles and tears, and one can clearly sense the very, very strong connection that has been made in very, very powerful ways.
What you don't see is the crew is crying too.
Really?
We loved being there. Oh, we did. And we felt every time we were saying goodbye to a convent, we felt like we were saying goodbye to home. You know, it was just wonderful, you know, what was going on, not just with the girls, but with the crew and the synergy that was taking place. It was just amazing.
You eventually will be sometime later today or tomorrow.
I am I'm principal of an elementary school in Millbank, South Dakota, but I'm also the national vocation director. So weekends and as my provincial teases me, Monday through Friday I'm in the school, but from Friday to Sunday I belong to her. So I do vocation work, and in the summer that's what I do 100% of the time, plus you know, working on our blog and all different kinds of things to communicate. I've learned how to Twitter. That has been really a fun thing.
Very good. For the sake of someone who isn't quite so familiar with the terminology, including me, so for Lutherans and others in the listening audience, explain what that term vocational really means in this context.
Well, a lot of young women and young men and think about serving the Lord in what we call the consecrated life, and that can be as a brother or a priest, and women to be sisters. Many times there's a little deep awareness of the heart the Lord may be calling them. So folks like myself will spend time with young women, listen to their stories, and we invite them to come and see the kind of work and prayer that we participate as a community, because as daughters of St. Mary of Providence, like the word providence, we are always aware, like the scripture of John 4 at the wedding feast of Cana, always ready to provide for the needs of others. But it's a mindset and a way of living that can be embraced by any woman that doesn't have any impediments, like children, isn't married, that would be free to follow and to let the Lord be her all. So it's a really kind of a neat thing.
Yeah. I wonder if you could say a word about how you personally treated the possibility of being part of something like a reality television program. And I don't know how much you were acquainted with some of the reality programming that is created nowadays, which can be among the most distasteful programs to be seen on television, in my opinion at least. Were you taken aback by this possibility, or did you pretty eagerly embrace it without much hesitancy?
Well, I got to start with who introduced me. Our sisterhood belongs to an organization called the Institute on Religious Life, and they're pretty solid. They're supported by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And when the director, Mike Wick, and an old professor who I ran into at this conference last April, they said, "You got to meet Linda. You'll just love Linda." And they didn't tell me what Linda was about. But when I did meet her and we just naturally bonded, she started to tell me about the reality show. I know that reality shows can seem a little, you know, trite, but I think that's the generation in which we're living in. I think for myself, I wasn't afraid because the founder of my order, if you were to put this in a parallel to the 1880s, was out there printing books, informing people, doing publicity, all different kinds of things to get people to understand and evangelize in God's name. So he wanted to know and help them. So that's part of our nature. If he were alive today, St. Louis Guanella is his name, I don't doubt that he would have pushed us forward. And the very fact that this was a possibility, I've worked with a lot of different kinds of structures to give girls like retreat experiences. One is called the Nun Run. And that's kind of like visiting over a weekend four or five different communities to get a little taste of it. Maybe they'll pray in one. Maybe they'll do an activity in another. Maybe they'll have the Eucharist, celebrate the Mass together in another one. And then they'll see if they're drawn and feel at home. So I knew that this was globally a good possibility. And I tell you, it has been more than I can imagine the response that I've gotten, not only from young women, but from priests and bishops throughout the world that are very interested in what we are doing, because we are well known for our work with people with special needs in education and the marginalized. We're missionary sisters, all of us, internationally. So we understand that the whole world is your country, and we want to be able to show the world that, you know, there is a choice you can make, and it will have meaning, and it will bear fruit in Jesus Christ. So this was just a really good fit. And getting to know Linda Moore and understanding that the people that she was working with had a great respect. We set up kind of an understanding of what areas of the convent they couldn't go and visit, what we called the cloister areas. But they were with us pretty much 18 hours a day, filming wherever we are, whether we're down in our soup kitchen in downtown Chicago on the south side, or whether we're out with our retired sisters outside of Chicago, those cameras were there rolling. So that was kind of interesting. So I found myself as a teacher teaching, but being very focused on the girls. So the cameras didn't bother me. I didn't really notice them a whole lot.
That's our sense too, as we watch it. And I have to say, by funny coincidence, we're recording this interview Monday afternoon. Last night, I went to a performance of the musical The Sound of Music at our local community theater, and it occurs to me that for many people, especially for people who happen not to be Catholic, probably the biggest source of information about what do nuns do, what are nuns like, is when you watch something like The Sound of Music. And how much, I mean, and that's a wonderful show, of course,
right,
but how much richer to have cameras take us into the heart of the work you do.
That's
and
right.
And what it means,
right.
I mean, every day of the week from morning to night,
exactly.
what this walk is about. I wonder if you could just say a quick word about what difference you think it made for these five young women to be walking this particular path in this sort of extraordinary circumstance of having cameras there, and of them, of course, having the opportunity to sort of say out loud what they're sort of experiencing, wondering, struggling with. I mean, you've seen a lot of young women go through this path.
Right.
What way do you think this was a different experience for these five young women because of what it was?
Well, I think, first of all, we call this process discernment, and it doesn't happen over a course of 10 days. That's how long they were in each of these places. And what you saw was a condensed version of an experience that usually takes at least 1 to 2 years, because just like in a dating relationship, you don't meet someone and you might say, oh, this could go somewhere, but you want to find out more about them and the person you're going to marry. And the same thing with these women coming here. They were already having a relationship with the Lord, and they wanted to see what if. In the case of Stacy, has her head on very straight, knows what she wants with her life, is, you know, beginning to feel the comfort of knowing that this is a possible life choice she could do. Christy, the same way. Claire came a little bit more seasoned because of her home life was more what we call homeschooled environment. So she was imbued with a knowledge more than these young ladies would of studying about the faith and reading about religious life, some of the church documents. She was quite well-versed in that. So she kind of knew already what she wanted. The other two, Asini and Francesca, were young people, and they just wanted to find out what that would be like, whether they knew someone that was a sister in the past or whether it just sounded like a neat opportunity. I think it was more than they bargained for, because, as I mentioned in the show, one of the things is when you're in quiet with the Lord, you meet yourself as well as meet him. And sometimes we don't want to look at our demons. We don't want to look at the things that we aren't proud of. And we have to let him heal us. And a lot of times people freak out, as you saw that happened a few times. So the work balances us out as well. We take that suffering and we transform it into charity through the Lord's cross. And that's how we're able to do what we do. Because many times it's hard to work with street people. Many times it's hard to take time to pray. You think you're not; it's not going anywhere. But together as a community, this is the body of Christ praying together. This is the body of Christ serving together. And it's so comforting for me to know that. And I think they were experiencing that I watched them transform from day to day as they got into the rhythm of our life. It was too bad it was short-lived for them to come and stay, because I can remember Christy saying, just when I was getting used to being here, and now we're moving on to another place.
I remember that, too.
Cool. Yeah,
I remember that, too.
Yeah.
And I wonder, for you personally, did you end up, I mean, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but I'm pretty sure you ended up really enjoying this experience thoroughly, even apart from the good which you think it has done, for instance, for the Catholic Church and for the matter of helping people understand what this life is. But just on kind of a personal level, it seemed like something that for you was a great pleasure and probably an interesting new adventure.
You got it right. It was definitely an adventure. I think that what impressed me is that I love people, and I feel that any opportunity that I am able to be with young people, especially, they're full of hope and joy. And sometimes you forget it's there. And so that's my teacher mind and my mother's heart. We're called to be mothers, sisters, and friends to everybody. So for me, that fulfills, in a way, things that I see that are longing. And when you help other people, I get a special feeling of joy myself when I see they get it. Oh, yeah, this is connected.